Stephanie.
And this is the Are You New Here podcast.
Yay!
This is a podcast of pop cultural literacy. I am the host who knows way too much about pop culture, and my sister, Stephanie, knows basically nothing.
It's true.
Today, we have a special guest with us, and we're going to introduce him, and then we will talk about our topic. So, Stephanie, would you like to introduce our special guest today?
No, I want to say the sponsor.
Well,
do we do that after our guest?
I thought we'd introduce the guest and then introduce the sponsor.
Okay, fine. Okay, all right. Well, today we have the wonderful and fabulous Jeff with us, coming all the way from about a 10-minute walk from my house. So hello, Jeff. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Great to be here.
We are super happy to have you. Okay, now should I say who the sponsor is?
Yes. Stephanie, tell us who this episode's sponsor is.
This episode is sponsored by lawyers. Because we have broken our one lawyer per episode rule and now have two lawyers. I won't say anything about Jeff, but I will say if anyone gets arrested, don't call me. Unless you have an invention idea while you're in jail. Otherwise, don't call me.
So since when did we have a one lawyer per episode rule?
That's the rule. Did you not know?
But our previous intern was a lawyer.
Oh, I forgot our previous intern was a lawyer. Yes, but he was also a loan agent. What is it?
Loan officer to the stars.
Yes.
Which is a good segue into the fact that we have a new intern.
Yay!
Our new intern, his name is Miles. He is a 6-month-old schnoodle, and he is currently sleeping on the job.
So standard intern bit. I should mention that Miles is his official name, but we also call him Strudel the Schnoodle, which my husband came up with, which is pretty amazing.
So you call him that. No one in New York calls him that.
Well, Jeff's going to call him that now. Strudel the Schnoodle. Come on, that's a great name. Do you want to share anything about Miles/Strudel?
So Miles is a schnoodle. He's a schnauzer poodle mix. He is allegedly a mini, but he is getting larger by the minute. I think he's growing right now.
So like a child.
Pretty much, yes. I'm exhausted all the time because he's a puppy. And basically, whenever I want to get up, Miles wants to be up half an hour before that. It doesn't matter what time. It's just half an hour before I want to be awake.
So what podcasting experience does he have?
He has no podcasting experience.
Which is excellent. He's the perfect intern.
Yes, which is why he is an intern and not a producer.
Wait, we have no podcast experience, but we're the hosts.
Well, no, we do have podcast experience. We listen to podcasts, and that is
right.
Experience.
That is absolutely right. All right, let's get on with this show. All right, Erica, tell us how we're going to do this, and then we'll shut up and let our special guest talk.
Sure. So a while ago, Jeff sent a list of his top 10 recent books to Stephanie, and we decided that that would make an excellent topic for our podcast. So the way that we're going to do this is I have also made a list of my top 10 books.
Listener, I have not, just to be clear.
And so Jeff and I will trade our book, starting at 10 and counting down to 1. I will say that my numbers are somewhat arbitrary because I do find it hard to rank books. But I looked back through my database of books read because, yes, I have a database of books read and came up with my list.
Yeah, before we get to that, Jeff, why don't you tell us a little bit about, I know that when you and I talked before you sent the list, you told me that you are a massive fantasy sci-fi fan. So can you talk a little bit about that?
I am. And to be clear, these are my top 10 fantasy and science fiction books since the pandemic started. That was kind of my cutoff date. To be honest, my top 10 of all books would probably be pretty similar to this. There might be one or two differences, but most of what I read is fantasy and science fiction. I'm certainly a voracious consumer of fantasy and science fiction books, television, and movies, but books in particular, I'd say, and I have been since I was basically 11 or 12 years old. And I think it's been a really, really strong last few years for the genre. So I'm excited to share what I loved.
Erica, when did you start reading sci-fi fantasy? When you were like -4?
I think I started reading science fiction when I was -4, but I actually didn't start reading fantasy until I was in college. So,
you know, I didn't know about fantasy until Mariah Carey came out with her song. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. See, Jeff is new, so he's laughing. He thinks I'm funny. All right. So we have the duel of the sci-fi fantasy. Now, Jeff, how many books total of all genres do you think you have ever read? Take a wild guess.
That's impossible. I mean, I'm 46, so 40 years of
Don't admit to
reading.
that.
Does that sound old? I don't know.
No.
I mean, I don't know.
How many books?
5,000? I have
Okay.
no idea. 10,000 is impossible to say.
How many books do you think you read a year in like an average year?
Yeah, I mean, less since I had kids, frankly,
Boo,
but
kids ruin everything.
yeah, but still, 3 or 4 books a month now, I'd say I read.
That's amazing. Arab, what are you reading now? Also, note, listener, she has no kids, so. I have a puppy,
Yeah, the
which
puppy
is.
doesn't stop you from reading.
He does when he tries to chew the book.
Okay, so we're gonna do the puppy versus kid thing again.
We are not. I will just say though that he was chewing on the magazine I was reading this afternoon, which makes it hard to read.
That's fair. Okay, how many books do you read a year?
So it's less than it used to be. I mean, at one point I was reading like 70 books a year, which is insane. And then when I started writing, I was reading less because I was writing more. And then I just got general life busy. So I probably read around 40 to 50 books a year, I
All
think.
right, so you guys are about the same. I probably read, well, let's see,
Three.
three, not including books about Greek mythology, World War II, ancient civilizations. What else are we on these days? Yeah, so basically, if it's in the J section of the library, I'm all over it. But for grown-up books, not so much. So.
Yes, when we used to go on vacations, we would go to places like a beach, and you would read one, sometimes two books during
I
that week.
would. To be clear, I know how to read.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so you guys are both voracious readers. You're both fans of the genre. Listener, for your purposes, on Jeff's list, I have read exactly one of the books. Yay me. I'm super proud of myself. I don't know how many of the books I've read on Erica's list because I haven't seen it yet. So, Erica, have I
Yes.
read any of the books on your list?
Probably not.
Probably not.
And I will say, spoiler, there's no overlap between our lists, which does not
Ooh.
mean that there is no books on Jeff's list that I have read. I think that we
You
just
just think they
have,
suck.
no, I they're just not in my top 10. I think also it's more fun to talk about 20 books instead of like 18
Sure.
or 15, right? I think that we probably have just a little bit of a different taste, but not in a bad way, just we're different people. So, without further ado, Jeff, would you like to start with your number 10 book?
Yeah, number 10 is Middle Game by Seanan McGuire. Really fun book. Definitely could not put it down, which is pretty much true for all 10 of these, I'd say. It's a compelling story, kind of focusing on alchemy. Alchemy is kind of the fantastical element in the book about twins who are separated, who have a really powerful connection. And just a really, really interesting book. It has sort of a kind of a Narnia-like subplot in it that's hard to get into without giving much away, but there's kind of an interesting Narnia-themed subplot. But mostly it's really about alchemy and about the relationship between these twins. So I enjoyed it.
Are the twins real, or did they get created out of like metal or some such?
They are real humans, but they actually, that is an interesting question because they actually are like created creatures. The
Didn't
twin,
know.
because I read the book.
Oh,
So
man. Dang it.
the main twins are Roger and Dodger. So basically they're two halves of the same coin in that Roger is really good with languages and writing, and Dodger is a math genius.
Dodger was in Oliver Twist.
Yes. But that's the artful Dodger. So you're close, but no scar.
Hey,
But
okay.
they are so like this dude like created these twins like a bunch of sets of twins in a lab, and then he like intentionally separated them. They're like all science experiments.
That's
I actually yes,
mean.
I found some of it a little creepy. I didn't hate Middle Game. It wasn't like
But
well, I liked it. I thought it was a good, fun adventure. What I will say is it's not my favorite. I like Seanan McGuire's Wayward Children books better. Have you read those?
I have not. They're on my list, but I have not read any of them, actually.
So it turns out I've only read, I was looking it up, I've read one, like four and five or something. They're novellas, but they're like loosely connected. So I think it's okay that I read
It
them
is
out of
not
order.
okay.
Who are you, the book police?
Yes, I'm the book police. I'm going to come and put a bookmark in your face and shake it at you. So, yeah. All right. Do you have anything else to say about Jeff's number 10?
I mean, I liked Middle Game. What I will say about Middle Game is a lot of people liked Middle Game. It was nominated for the 2020 Hugo Award, which is when I read it. And so, you know, it wasn't my favorite book of that batch, but that was reading a whole bunch of really good books. So, you know, not being my favorite book of the batch doesn't necessarily make it a bad book. I think it just wasn't necessarily my thing, but I recognize that it was a really, really, you know, a really good book that a lot of people really liked. I just happened to like her other series better. Fun fact. So the book referenced like these children's stories by a pretend author. So they were like not real children's stories.
Were and they real children?
Yeah, they were real children. And the Seanan MacGuire like used that as her pen name and actually went off and wrote those children's stories.
Wait, Seanan is a woman?
Yes.
Oh, I like that better now. Okay. Yay. Cool. That's fun. So she wrote she actually wrote the pretend books. So they were pretend and now they're not pretend.
Yeah, I think it was like, yeah. So the pen name is A. Deborah Baker. And so she wrote,
not two Deborah Bakers, A. Deborah Baker.
Yeah. So Over the Woodward Wall is the first one. It's actually a whole series.
Okay. We can't get into this on every book. We're never going to be done. Jeff, do you have a rebuttal to what Erica said or?
No, I mean, it was 10th on my list, so I liked it very much. It was, there are 9 I like better, so I'll save my more robust defenses from my top 3 or 4.
All right, okay. Fair enough. Okay, Eric, what's yours?
My number 10 is a book called The Future of Another Timeline by Annalee Newitz. Jeff, did you read this book, or have you heard of this book?
I don't know.
Okay, so this is a book about basically feminist alternate history. It's about women who can essentially time travel and they go to other timelines and they basically have a like radical feminist agenda. It's a really interesting book. So Annalee Newitz hosts a podcast with Charlie Jane Andrews called Our Opinions Are Correct.
Wait, very much. That's not true. Our opinions are correct.
Well, but you haven't listened to their podcast. We might agree with them. But they're also the founders of the website io9.com.
io9 is, wait, I saw that movie. That was in Epcot, right? With Michael Jackson?
No, that was that was Captain EO, but very
it's
close.
The same thing.
And Charlie Jane Anders, I do love her, or I guess they, him, I'm not sure what the correct pronoun is, but the first Charlie Jane Anders book would have been in my top 10 if it fit in this timeline for sure.
That is totally fair. The first one was which one?
It was one about the magic and physics and the, God, what was that called?
So oh, yeah. Okay. I read All the Birds in the Sky. I liked All the Birds in the Sky. I didn't like The City in the Middle of the Night as much.
Yeah.
I really liked her short story, 6 Months, 3 Days.
Put that on my list.
So I saw something on Facebook where someone was talking about how he's gay and he has a kid, and the kid asked him, Daddy, how many minutes are there in a year? And he said, this was his moment to shine.
525,600 minutes.
Exactly. So that had nothing to do with what you guys were just saying, but I thought of it.
I once did the math on that, and it is correct.
Good to know. Good. What about a leap year?
Ooh.
No, it's for a non-leap year.
I could be in Rent 2.
Rent 2, right. Rent 2. Co-op.
Rent 2.
Rent 2. Mortgage. Okay. Rent 2. Oh, AIDS is okay now. Nope, went too far. Cut that out. Okay.
All right, Jeff, you're number 9.
Number 9 is The Raven Tower by Anne Ledecky. I think she's more known for science fiction, which I have not read, but I would like to now. Raven Tower is a very weird book. It's definitely not for everybody. I liked it because it was just so unique and unlike anything I've ever read in the genre. And sort of a spoiler alert here, because this is kind of a spoiler. The narrator of the book is like a sentient rock, which is an old god. So, I mean, that alone is a very unique voiced narrator. And you don't really figure that out for a while. You get a sense, maybe you know that it's a god, but you don't know that it's just a giant rock, basically. It really defies description. It's an unusual book and weird. And I just enjoyed it.
Okay. So, rock. Jeff, did you see Everything Everywhere All at Once?
I did.
Ah, so did I. So did Erica. That's amazing. Wait, we want rocks with googly eyes.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh,
that will be our.
What a great movie.
Right? We should do another episode on the movie. Yes.
No, that's going to be our bonus topic.
Oh, it is? Okay, fantastic. All right, then I'll for now.
Okay,
yes. Erica, what do you have to say about the Raven Tower?
So what I have to say about the Raven Tower
Wait,
is...
I'm sorry, isn't that a Harry Potter house?
No, that's Ravenclaw, but you're very close. So what I have to say about the Raven Tower is I remembered that I read this book, and I remembered literally nothing about it, which I don't think bodes well for me having liked it if I remembered nothing about it. But what I will say is now that I work for a company that is obsessed with birds... and ravens in particular, so I think I have to reevaluate it now. I will say, I really liked the Imperial Reg books that she wrote, starting with Ancillary Justice. I was excited to read this book, I remember, because I was like, oh, I like her other stuff. And I think I just didn't like it as much as the science fiction. I think that it's because I really liked her science fiction books that I think I had, like, higher expectations for it. Whereas you came in like, oh, I know nothing about this author.
That's right. But now I'm excited to read the science fiction because people, I have heard that they're fantastic and you clearly are a fan. So
So what's interesting about those books is that they have an interesting concept of gender and everybody is just default referred to as she using like feminine pronouns. So like you don't really know the genders of any of the characters at any point in the book. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, there was another book, Black Sun. Was that what it was called? That was
oh, the Rebecca Roanhorse book.
Yeah, I thought it very confusing. A lot of the, she invented kind of a pronoun.
I thought it was
very confusing.
I didn't love that book.
I didn't either. A lot of people I know loved it, and I couldn't finish it.
Yeah, it was one of the Hugo nominees, and I was like,
wait, I know that song. Black Hole Sun, won't you come?
It would have been better if the song was in the book at some point.
I know, right? Yep. Yeah. All right, well, come for the singing, stay for the nothing. Go ahead, Eric.
So I'm going to cheat because my number 9 is a whole series, but it's a short series. It's the Interdependency Trilogy by John Scalzi.
Well, of course they're together because they're interdependent.
Have you read these, Jeff?
I have. I usually love John Scalzi, and I did not love these. So
oh, that's interesting. I really liked them. I read them in, like, one chunk. Like, I read all three of them together. And I think that's part of why I liked it, because I was like, oh, I can read this like a like one big book. So Stephanie has actually read a John Scalzi book. She read Red Shirts.
We saw him.
We did. We saw him at the National Book Fair.
Festival. Back when PC, pre-child, when we used to, like, do stuff.
Oh, I thought you were going to say pre-pandemic, but yeah, also
well,
pre-child.
Both. Yeah, and he was funny, and then I read Red Shirts mainly because then I was like, I know a thing that people say! I was very proud of myself.
I really liked Red Shirts. I really liked The Android's Dream. I haven't read the Old Man War series, but I liked The Interdependency. Did you dislike it, or was it just not one of your favorites?
I mean, I didn't hate it. I only read the first two. I actually couldn't get motivated to read the third, so that's not a great sign, usually. Part of it is that I loved Old Man's War so much, and this is so, so far inferior to that series. Old Man's War is it's fantastic. Scalzi, I think, is not that great a writer in terms of, like, his characters, his dialogue, his writing ability. So to me, I feel like his plot has to be really strong for me to like his books. And I think Old Man's War had a really interesting plotting, really interesting aliens, really interesting stuff. And this, I just didn't care that much about the story. And I think the characters didn't do that much for me. And I find some of his, I just don't think he's as strong a writer as some of the other people on my list. So I wouldn't say I hated it, but I just found it less good than his earlier books that I've read.
That's fair. And, you know, a lot of his claim to fame is that he writes humor, and this was not humor. So I think the people going into it that were like, oh, this is going to be funny, and then it wasn't. Not that it was, like, you know, bad. It just was more serious, which I think Old Man's War is too, right?
It
it's
is.
Not
it
so
is.
Funny.
Just,
yeah.
I mean, that's just sort of the concept of Old Man's War. It's so interesting, and it's just so creative, and like the world building is so strong on it. And this felt a little more rushed to me versus that was something he clearly had worked on for a long, long time. And I mean, he's very prolific. These seem to be kind of quickly written to me, but
this is a much shorter series too. Old Man's War is what, like 6-7 books? It's like a longer. Yeah. Whereas this is just a trilogy. All right. Your number 8.
Next up is Recursion by Blake Crouch. And I read his first two books, Dark Matter and Recursion. I loved both. Recursion is something that's going to be a common theme for both of us. It seems like a kind of a time travel alternate timeline book, but in a very interesting, clever way. And I just find Blake Crouch's books to be just really propulsive reads. You just start and I read them basically in a day. I read both his books in a day because I could not stop reading them. And he's got a third one coming out this summer, which I'm excited to see. And you know, I think he's a physicist, or he certainly knows his physics. So I feel like there's a lot of interesting physics ideas that he imbues into his books, although not to say it was believable or anything like that, but it was interesting. Like all books with time travel or alternate timelines, if you think hard enough about it, there are certainly some flaws, but nevertheless, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so I have not read this book, but I looked it up and it sounds super interesting, and I'm going to add it to my TBR list, which is very long because there's always more books to read than hours in the day. I haven't read Dark Matter. I haven't read any of his stuff. So it sounds really cool, though. And I do. I really like time travel stories. And I totally agree with you that if you think too hard about them, they almost always fall apart, with maybe a couple of exceptions.
Yeah, although, Back to the Future is perfect.
Yeah, Back to the Future is perfect. But 1985,
A. It's a perfect movie. I'm not sure the time travel is perfect.
No one asked you.
Yeah. It's a perfect movie.
Perfect movie. There's this book called Mammoth, which I really like.
Oh, I love that book. I read that book. Spoiler that book is also perfect. Spoiler alert. But it was him.
Well, so spoiler alert, so basically they find this time machine and they reverse engineer it to build a time machine, and they use it and they go back in time, and then it turns out that the time machine they found is the one that they built.
Right. And the guy, he finds a human frozen in ice.
Right.
And then there were mammoths running around in like present day, and then there was a zoo. And there was a baby mammoth in a zoo. It was very crazy. And something about a watch. It was a whole to-do, but I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was a great book. But yeah, it like makes your head hurt because it's like, you know, it's one of those like, it happened because it always happened. Like there's two types of time travel books. One is you can change the timeline, and the other is you can't change the timeline. So like if you go back to stop the assassination of Lincoln, it turns out that you're the one that assassinated him, right?
But has mammoths.
But with mammoths. Yes, exactly. So my number 8 is also a time travel book, incidentally. It is the novella This Is How You Lose the Time War by M.L.L. Matar and Max Gladstone. It actually won the 2020 Hugo for Best Novella, and it has two authors, and it is about two time agents on opposite sides of a war, and they start leaving notes for each other as they're basically traveling to try to change the past, to make the present come out the way that they want. And they start leaving notes for each other. And it's a really fascinating book. And the two authors, each of them take on the persona of one of the agents of the Time War. So the characters are writing back and forth to each other, but the authors are also writing back and forth.
Is it epistolary?
It's not entirely epistolary, no.
I know a word.
What does that mean?
Oh, can I explain it?
You can do it.
It's a book in letters.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yay. Okay, go ahead. So it's not epistolary.
It's not an epistolary novel, but
bummer.
It is exciting that you know that word. Yeah, and it's really good book.
I have read it and I agree. Yeah. There's no real reason it's not in my top 10 other than it's just kind of short. So that's my like critique of it. It goes very quickly. It's a beautiful book and really interesting and like nothing else I read before it. So I loved it.
I bet the rules, because some of my entries are whole series and some of my entries like this one is just a novella. So they average out.
There are rules?
No. Let's talk about your number 7, Jeff.
The Vanished Birds by Simon Jimenez. Another one that's really well written. The writing is like sort of top tier, especially for a genre book. And it's just really interesting. I mean, it's kind
wait,
of...
Wait, wait, hang on, hold up. Especially for a genre book? I take exception to that as someone who has written, like, 8 unpublished novels. genre books can be beautifully well written. Like, you're a genre reader. How could you be like, oh, genre books?
I just feel like there's a lot of sci-fi and fantasy books that I love, including some on this list. The writing isn't always top tier. Like, I don't think Andy Weir is a really beautiful wordsmith. I don't think that John Scalzi is a great wordsmith, but I love their stories and the way they think. I think that sort of story is often the top driver and what attracts people to certain sci-fi or fantasy books. So when one is really has a really well written, where the language is really beautiful, I think that's a huge bonus to that's all. But there are many. And again, there's a few more on my list that I will compliment the writing.
Okay. All right. What he's saying, Erica, is that you're not very good. That's what he's saying. You're not very good.
I haven't read any of your books for the record. So
that is fair. I am an unpublished novelist.
So yeah, this one, again, it's sort of hard to summarize. There's a few different stories in it. My favorite part was actually the opening, which kind of could have been a standalone story about this world that was kind of a colonized world, essentially, or kind of a more rural agrarian world and how it interacts with more spacefaring societies, and everything kind of ties together in the book, but there's a lot of disparate stories. It was just very interesting and very different. I really enjoyed reading it.
Okay. The Birds Vanish?
Yes. It's a future society where there are no longer any birds.
Oh. So my number 7 is a book called Witchmark by C.L. Polk. It's a series that's set in sort of like an alternate Edwardian England sort of a place. So it's like not actually Edwardian England, but it's kind of like sort of like that time period. And the first book is about this guy who is just like, he's a doctor and he rides his bike to work and he's just seems like a normal dude. And he fought in this like magic war, but it turns out that he's like witch royalty.
Witch royalty.
Yeah. So, and it's really good world building. There's a fun romance story, male-male. So if you're not into that, you might not like this book. It's just a really good book with a really good story. And then there's two more. I think it's a trilogy. And the second one centers on the main character's sister. And then the third one centers on one of his friends. So it's like there's a large romance element in all of the books, and also just really interesting world building and an interesting magic system and an interesting world. On the spectrum of magic in our worlds versus like totally made up world, this is pretty much totally made up world, which I liked. I thought it was really interesting world building.
Are there any muggles?
There are people who don't use magic, but they are not called muggles.
That's disappointing.
I have not read that book, but it sounds cool.
So, Jeff, why don't you tell us about your number 6, and then I'm going to be quiet, and Stephanie is going to talk about her opinion of it.
Oh, there we go. So, The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, and this is really the top 6 of the 6 I really loved. So this is the first one that I really, really loved. It's by V.E. Schwab, and I really liked her Darker Shades of Magic series. But I'd say, actually, I think her writing has actually improved a lot. She's gotten a lot better. I really enjoyed those books, but I think this was a better written book, better characters. It's about a woman from, I think it was early 18th century France, who is cursed with eternal life, and by a sort of a demon, tracks her story through the present day. You know, I just think she's a really interesting character, goes through a lot of very harsh things, very interesting things, and she meets someone in the present day who's kind of an interesting love interest, while having this very interesting relationship with the demon who cursed her. I just thought it was kind of a beautiful story, and I enjoyed it.
So, I actually read this book, and I loved it. I thought it was awesome sauce. I like things that are... I do like time travel, although I do ask a lot of questions about it. But I also really like things that are like either-or kind of stuff, right? Like It's a Wonderful Life, Sliding Doors, like that sort of thing. And for some reason, this like scratched that particular nerve. And I think it's because she's living this life, but no one remembers her. So it's like, was she there or wasn't she there? Right. And so like one of the things in the book is that she influences artists. She's like a muse that they don't remember. So, you know, like she keeps going home with the same guy and he doesn't remember her, but she's slowly writing a song for him, essentially. And, you know, and then he kind of remembers the song but doesn't remember her. There were some parts that were upsetting. So I don't know if I would say it was fully SFS. Listen to the episode about SFS. She meets someone who actually Jeff mentioned does remember her, because his curse is that it's something like when people see him, they get what they desire the most, and she wants to be remembered. So since she sees him, she gets what she wants, which is to be remembered. And I just thought the scene where they met was amazing. He owns a bookstore and she steals a book because why not? She can, no one remembers her. And he runs after her and remembers her. And she was just like, what? And then there was this other whole bit where her face kept showing up in history. So it wasn't just like she was a muse and, inspiring artists, but she also, like, her face kept showing up in art. People would draw her and they don't remember where it came from. And the guy's friend was doing some kind of, like, I don't know, a dissertation or whatever on this woman who seemed to be showing up all throughout time in art. And anyway, I just thought that was really fun. So, yes, I read a book. Yay me.
When
So.
I've been trying to get my wife to read this book. She is not a fan of science fiction and fantasy. We have very different tastes in books, but I think that sale job would sell her because everything you're talking about is the kind of thing that she enjoys. That's why I think she would like this book alone, probably among this list. I think she would like this book. So
So,
I'm going to tell her that you're a fan as well.
well, yeah, and for our listener, I'm a big fan of Jeff's wife. So, there you go.
So, question number one, she writes this song and a dude takes credit?
Yep.
That's not cool.
Agreed.
There's no precedent historically for that, by the way, at all.
No,
No,
that has never happened.
that is definitely fiction. So, the description of this book kind of reminds me of another book that you and I both read, Stephanie, How to Stop Time by Matt Haig.
I love that book, and I love Matt Haig, except for the book that was sort of autobiographical about his suicide attempt. I didn't like that one. It
Yeah.
was very
Did
sad.
you read The Midnight Library?
I did, and I loved Midnight Library, which reminded me of Thursday Next, obviously.
Okay, fair.
Right? And then what's
We
the other one that I liked? Oh, Una Out of Order.
Una Out of Order is on my TBR list, but I haven't
It's
read
a
it yet.
great book. I really like that one. Like, right in my bucket. Wheelhouse? Bucket.
Wheelhouse.
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 Yeah. This is they're four step. They're for me, right?
Yeah.
I've heard a lot about Addie LaRue, and it was very popular for a while. You couldn't get it out of the library. But interestingly, I read the first Darker Shades of Magic book and was not into it at all. So I was like, everybody's talking about this Addie LaRue book, but I didn't really like her other book, but I think I need to check it out.
Oh, but you will like her because she's a redhead, not Addie LaRue, V.E. Schwab.
Yes, but because I like redheads doesn't mean I like all the books that they write.
Yeah, I wouldn't disqualify this on that basis. It really, first of all, they're very different from Darker
Yeah,
Shades.
well, that's the impression that I got.
And
It's
I
like
do think, and she has improved a lot as a writer. I mean, I think she's gotten better, even though I like Darker Shade of Magic.
Darker Shade of Magic is the one with like the different colors of London, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like Black London and Red London. I just wasn't super into it. I think I didn't like the main character that much. I'm trying to remember. I just wasn't that into it, and I never read the next one.
I like something that's dueling magicians. I tend to have a soft spot for it. So it's already, that was kind of very much in my
Like
wheelhouse.
The Prestige. I loved The Prestige,
I
but
love
the
the,
movie. I didn't actually read the book.
We went to a dueling pianos place in Universal.
We did. That is a different kind of a duel.
If they were magical pianos, I'd be
They
down. But
were not. They were just regular pianos.
yeah, just regular pianos. And yeah. All right. What are we up to?
My number six is The Strange Case of the Alchemist's Daughter by Theodora Goss.
Ooh,
So,
two alchemy books, listener.
well, this isn't really about alchemy.
Boo.
So, this is the first book in a series about a bunch of female daughters or versions of classic monsters. So, the main character is Mary Jekyll, and she
As
has.
in Doctor.
As in Doctor, and she has a half sister, Diana Hyde. So they actually have the same father, except only sort of, obviously.
Oh, can we talk briefly about the when we went to that restaurant, Jekyll and Hyde, in Times Square?
I mean, we could talk about it, sure.
It
There's
was terrible. It was like really scary. There was like stuff on the wall. Anyway, sorry. Go back to the book.
it's supposed to be a fun place.
It was
Anyway.
weird. Okay,
And
whatever.
there's like Justine Frankenstein, who was the Bride of Frankenstein, and a few other various female monsters or monstrous children, and they all kind of get together and solve mysteries. It's
Of
kind of
course they do.
And Mary ends up working for Sherlock Holmes, so and it's set in Victorian London, and it's just a really fun book series. They're fun mysteries, they're fun characters. They're sort of like the society outcasts, right? Like Mary Jekyll is the most normal of the bunch, believe it or not. It's a really fun series.
I have not read it, but again, sounds really interesting.
So it appears that the author's name is Theodora Goss, and I want to sing, Theodora writes me a letter every day. That's it. I'm going to keep singing, listener.
I see that. So there's this old movie called Theodora Goes Wild, which is a really wonderful screwball comedy, which is not at all related to this book or any books on the list. I'm just gonna plug that for no reason. Okay, you're number
Number
five, Jeff.
five.
Number five is Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir, famous for The Martian. I'd say if you like The Martian, you will certainly like this book. It is similar in many ways, only I'd say with higher stakes. I call it The Martian kind of times the movie Sunshine plus Enemy Mine. Mix those three things together, that's the story. And there's some flaws with it. I mean, there's some sort of convenient plot devices. You know, I don't think Andy Weir, he's one I don't think is a tremendous writer, you know, his characters and dialogue and descriptions aren't always the best, but the plot of the book is just so good. It's so propulsive. It's so addictive. I could not stop reading it, and it had a very satisfying conclusion. It's just a really fun book. So if you like The Martian, either the movie or the book, you will definitely like this book.
I did like The Martian, and after I read The Martian, I was like, I should read his next book. And this is actually his third book, and I have not read his second or his third book, but it was nominated for the 2020 Hugo Award, so I will very likely read it when I'm reading all the Hugo Award nominees later this year.
So Erica told me I should watch that movie or read the book or whatevs, and I was like, no, it just sounds so upsetting. Like, he can't get home to his family, and I thought I would cry, so I didn't do it.
It's happy, though. I mean,
It has a happy ending. I don't tell you to read things or watch things that don't have happy endings. I know you don't do well with non-happy endings. I will say Andy Weir is very much what I call hard science fiction, or that everybody calls hard science fiction, I should say. That, you know, science fiction that's very much like heavy on the science. He actually like explains the engineering in The Martian, and it's because I believe he was an engineer.
I've heard his second book was terrible. I haven't read it, but I think after that he decided to go back to kind of what made The Martian so successful. And this, there are a lot of elements of The Martian in this, but it stands on its own. It's very different. But I think he decided after kind of veering off course to go back to what he knows and what he does well.
Hey, Erica.
Yes.
It turns out men could be engineers too.
Oh, really? I was not aware of that.
Me neither. Weird.
It's crazy.
Erica, number five. Right.
My number five is a book called Payback's a Witch.
Another one.
Yeah, by Lena Harper. So I very much like
puns.
You like puns. I like urban fantasy. This is a book about a girl who grew up in a magical town. And there are these four founding families, and they have magic, and everybody just sort of, magic is just like a part of the fabric of the town. And she moves away to go to college, and she stays away. And she comes back because there's like this magical contest where basically they have this contest every, I think, like 20 years, and whoever wins becomes like the magical mayor of the town. And her family is like the judges of the contest. So she comes back because she's the heir of her family and she needs to judge this contest. But the heir of the family that like has been winning this contest for like generations is her ex-boyfriend, and he's a real winner. So she decides, she basically conspires with the other families to like make him lose. It's actually a really fun book. There's a fun romance. She starts a relationship with one of the other heirs, and it's a fun book because, you know, it's about magic, but it's also just about someone who like had a really bad experience and moved away from home and now has to come back and deal with all their crap.
The prodigal witch.
Yes. Also, the main character has a schnauzer.
Ah, yes. As our listener knows, Jeff, Erica tries to bring up dogs as often as she possibly can. When she started watching the new season of Bridgerton, which your wife and I did the, you know, did the thing about, Erica was like, there's a dog! And I'm like, ah.
Also, my review of Bridgerton season 2 is not enough Newton.
Newton was the dog.
Yes, he's a corgi. Mm-hmm. I think he was extremely underutilized. Let's talk about your number 4, Jeff.
Yes, Exhalation, the new Ted Chiang, or newish Ted Chiang short story compilation. He's most known for The Story of Your Life, which is the basis for the movie Arrival. Very good movie, but I think the story was a lot better because the movie kind of cut out half of the story that was very important. If you like Ted Chiang, you will like this book. If you're not a Ted Chiang person, you will not. It's very much similar to what he's done before. I just think he's just the most interesting thinker, I think, among anyone on my list, or just anyone, period, in my view. He just really has really interesting ideas. Not every story hits, but two of the longer ones, the titles I just thought were just two of my favorite science fiction short stories ever. The first was The Merchant and the Alchemist's Gate, kind of an Arabian Tales kind of thing going on, but also with a bit of time travel. And Anxiety is the Dizziness of Freedom, which I thought was just, I found them both very moving, actually. You know, he writes in a very prosaic, very kind of, he kind of writes like straight science fiction, and it's sort of very stilted, his writing, and yet somehow he can really evoke a real emotional response in a lot of people, certainly in me. And I found some of the stories in Exhalation really emotionally powerful. I really enjoyed it.
So I really, really loved Arrival. I didn't actually read The Story of Your Life, but Arrival was one of my favorite movies that year. I really loved it. I really wanted to recommend it to you, Stephanie, but it's NSFS, so
yes.
It has one of your triggers in it, so I did not recommend it to you, even though I loved it. I read some of the stories in this short story collection. I read Anxiety is the Dizziness of Freedom, and I read Omphalos, I think. I have the whole collection, but I didn't read the whole collection. I don't remember the stories that well, which doesn't mean that I didn't like them. It just means that they were a little in one ear and out the other.
Read Story of Your Life, because if you liked Arrival, so basically Arrival sort of just hits the linguistics half of Story of Your Life, and it's pretty faithful to that. But half of Story of Your Life is about physics. The aliens have a completely different view of both physics and language, and the movie just totally drops the physics
well,
half.
But they have a totally different view of time, too.
True. But I guess it's true, because the physics is not causal, so that sort of goes in with their time. But there was a lot of really interesting physics discussion that the movie didn't really get. It only approached it from the language side. Their notion of time is implicated both by language and their physics, but I feel like the movie, probably for good reason, dropped a lot of interesting stuff that was in the story.
So what's cool about this is Exhalation is a short story collection. So if you don't like one piece of it, just move on to the next story.
With Ted Chiang and both of his compilations, I don't love every story, but the ones I love, I really love. It's just, I think they're kind of hit or miss, just whatever impacts you. But he is a very interesting thinker, without question.
So my number four is Magic for Liars by Sarah Gailey. This is a story about two twin sisters, one of whom has magic and the other one doesn't.
So if it were you and me, which one of us would have the magic? Not that we're twins, but you know.
Me.
Obviously.
The twin that doesn't have magic is a private detective, and the other one teaches at a magic school. And there is a murder at the magic school, and they recruit the detective sister to come and try to solve the murder. And she has to sort of deal with all of her sibling crap while she's trying to solve this murder. It's a really good story. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a fun story because it's kind of dark, but it's a really good story. And I actually like a lot of their stories. Sarah Gailey also wrote a story called Upright Women Wanted, which is a pretty fun story about women kind of traveling around in the Old West and kind of educating other women that it's okay to like women and you should not be hanged for that, like they apparently were doing in the Old West version of this story. So a lot of feminist stuff. Magic for Liars isn't so much about that. It's more about the relationship between the sisters.
So which story? One is the liar?
Well, you'll have to read the book to find out.
Oh.
I did read this book. I liked it. It didn't leave a huge impression on me. I thought it was fun and interesting, and I definitely enjoyed it. But it wasn't in my top 10, but I certainly recommend it.
Did you read any of her other stuff? Apparently she has a series of books where people ride around on hippos. I have not read those.
That sounds more my speed.
Yeah, probably.
It appears to be called American Hippo. That's a little on the nose. All right, top three. Da-da-da-da-da-da.
So next one is The Black Tongue Thief by Christopher Buhlmann. And this book, I just sort of looked interesting. I picked it up. I never heard of him before. And it's just a really fun read. I've heard that the audiobook is fantastic. Supposedly he does the reading, does all the voices, and I've heard it's a great audiobook. I just read it. It sort of feels like you're a character in a D&D campaign throughout the book. That's how the kind of feeling of it. So if you like D&D, I think you'll love this book. You know, the main character's a thief and kind of a rogue. And it's just fun. It's just the language is great. The characters are great. I think the world building was really good. And I just enjoyed it. It was just a really fun, kind of raucous time.
Hey, we know about D&D. go back and listen to the episode with our guest Aaron.
Stephanie was very confused for like incredibly the entire confused. Episode.
Yes. So standard.
So I've not read this book. I had not heard of this book. I looked it up. It looks like it's definitely fun. The description reminded me a little bit of The Lies of Locke Lamora, which was not a book that I loved, but I was like, it's not necessarily my type of thing. But then I was like, oh, well, actually, maybe it is. I think I might check this one out.
It's fun. It's quick. It's a very quick read. And there's more coming. It's apparently there's going to be a sequel. So if you like it, there's more to come.
My number three is More Cheating. It's a series of mostly novellas, although there is one novel which won the most recent Hugo. The Murderbot Diaries series by Martha
Murderbot.
Wells. Murderbot. Murderbot is a
robot that kills people.
Yes, but sort of like a part android, part cloned human thing that is owned by a security company. You know, if you're going to do like an expedition on a planet, right, you rent one or more of these security bots the way that you would rent like an alarm system or an excavator or something, right, from the security company. But Murderbot, that is a self-given nickname, has hacked its governor module and so is no longer controlled by the security company and is independent, thinks independently and can work independently. And while Murderbot continues to do the job, Murderbot just wants to sit around and watch soap operas, basically. And is, and that's...
Wait, which one? Does he watch Days?
No, they're like, you know, in-world soap operas.
Oh, so not like, No Young and the Restless?
No Young and the Restless, but yeah, just basically just wants to like stream this universe's equivalent of Netflix all day. Since this is a creature that can basically has like computer chip in its brain, can basically multitask. So can monitor the security situation and also stream media. And there's a lot of really crazy adventures and it's a really fun series. Murderbot's a really fun character despite calling itself Murderbot.
Why does it call itself Murderbot? Is it trying to be like cool, like giving itself like a tattoo so people think it's tough? Does it ride a Harley?
Well, there is no like equivalent of a Harley in this universe, but I think it's like, you know, I was designed to kill.
Okay, well, that's very literal.
Yes, it is. But it's like sarcastic. Calls itself Murderbot like sarcastically. So I really like these books. I think they're a lot of fun. Jeff, have you read these?
I have not. I've not heard of it. Sounds cool.
So I think they're mostly novellas. It looks like there's six of them. And the most recent one, I think, is a novel. But I think you'll like them. They're fun books.
Oh, good. This is great. Got a long to-do list now.
The first one is called All Systems Red.
I assume you'll send me this list after the podcast.
I will.
And you, listener, can also find the list.
Oh.
We'll post it on Twitter.
For our two followers. Both of which are me. What's your number two?
Peronisi by Susanna Clarke. So Susanna Clarke is famous for Strange and Normal, which she wrote many years ago, and she's not written for a long time, and this is her follow-up book.
It's a lot shorter than Jonathan Strange and
Normal. A lot shorter, which I appreciate. I like Strange and Normal. It was just too long. I thought it was too long, too many footnotes. Just it was hard to get through, even though I loved it.
I love footnotes.
We love footnotes. Have you read the Thursday Next series, Jeff, by Jasper Ford? No, well, they have something called a footnoter phone, and the characters talk to each other in footnotes, and it's amazing.
It is amazing.
Sorry. Okay, so Susanna Clarke.
Yeah, so this is much shorter. It bears nothing in common with the previous book. It's a completely different idea. I can see this not being for everyone, this book. It's there really is no other book like it I've ever heard of, which is part of the reason I really enjoyed it. It's just a very unique story. Like Strange and Normal, it's beautifully written. She is a beautiful writer, spectacularly good writer. Just every detail is so thought out. And just visually, you could just really, you feel and see everything that's happening in the book. I don't want to really describe much about it because the main character is sort of has a limited knowledge of the world he lives in at the start of the book and has to sort of find out more. So I don't want to really spoil anything. It's a really short book and just worth reading. But again, that's one I think some people will not like and some people absolutely love. And I loved it. I found it really moving and interesting.
It's funny that you say it was not for everybody because it was not for me. I was not into this book, but I will admit that I also did not really like Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, and I read all 9,000 pages of it. I have a very distinct memory of reading that book in downtown Manhattan and in hardcover on ice, which means that I must have been lugging it back and forth on the train for probably like a month because it was a huge, super long book.
So the subway or the railroad?
The railroad.
Well, then you had time to read.
Yes. So I read Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. I was not super into it. I didn't hate this book, but I think I just got like bored with it. Because at the beginning, you don't really know what's going on because the main character, who's the narrator, doesn't really know what's going on. And I think I was sort of annoyed because at one point I felt like I knew more than he did. And I was just like, okay, all right, I figured out what's going on here. And at some point I just got like frustrated with it. It just wasn't my thing. I agree with you that it's a beautifully written book. I've read other books that are like that, where you don't really know what's going on at the beginning, and there's no real payoff to that. There's definitely payoff for this.
Yeah, I'm not surprised to hear that, because I really do think it doesn't really fit neatly into a category of like, oh, if you like this book, you'll like this. I think it just either it kind of hits you the right way or it doesn't. And it is kind of, for a short book, sort of repetitive and purposefully. It's has right. This kind of rhythm to it, which I enjoyed, but I wouldn't say it's for everyone, but I enjoyed it.
All right, so I am going to do my number two and then my number one, because I'm going to let Jeff have the last word with his number one. So my number two was A Deadly Education by Naomi Novik. So Naomi Novik is known for the Temeraire books, Her Majesty's Dragon. She's written a lot of books about dragons, also Spinning Silver and some others. This is technically a YA series, although it's really dark. It is about teenagers in a school. It's a school of magic, and it's sort of like Nightmare Hogwarts. So basically, the idea is that there's all of these creatures that are Maleficaria that are basically feed on magical energy, and young magic users, particularly adolescent magic users, put out a lot of this magical energy. And so they decided that the best way to protect them is to gather them all in this magical school, because the school has all these magical protections, because they're not safe out in the world. But the problem is all of these bad things basically all converge on the school and are trying to eat the children. And there's no actual adults in this world. All the courses are taught through like magical correspondence, right? Like you go and you sit
like
in a
Sally
room.
Struthers.
Yeah, like you go and you sit in a room and then just like work just appears on your desk and you just like hand it into a box. And so it's just a bunch of like teenagers like basically fending for themselves. It's like if Hogwarts had no teachers and there were evil things trying to kill you.
I feel like though Hogwarts, sometimes you're wondering where the teachers are. You're like, where are you people? Right. Are you gonna do anything? So it's kind of like that.
Yeah, but even darker than that. It's a really good series. So it's a trilogy. The first two books are out. The third book is coming out in, I think, September. I'm really excited. The second book ended on a cliffhanger. I really, really liked it when I read the first one, and I was really excited to go find the second one. I thought this was a really good book with a really interesting main character.
This is my turn for a divergence from you. So Naomi Novik wrote Uprooted, which is my favorite fantasy book of the last 10 years, I'd say. I love Uprooted. I read it 3 times. I love that book so much.
And Uprooted it's like a retelling of Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah. But it's just, I think it's just so creative and so interesting. And I love that book.
Did you like Spinning Silver too?
I love Spinning Silver. I also love Spinning Silver. So I love.
Is that one about Rapunzel?
No, but yeah, both books have a lot of Jewish themes to them, especially Spinning Silver. So Spinning Silver is almost like a Jewish folktale kind of vibe to it. So I like that a lot as well. And these books I found to be a letdown after those two. I read them both. I'll probably read the third. I just found the story a little thin, especially the second book. I think they were kind of repetitive, just like a lot of her fighting monsters over and over again. I just wasn't that interested. I thought that those previous two stories were so tight and just so great, really well thought out stories. I felt this like it was a lot of filler in both books. And I also didn't love the main character. I love the main characters in both Uprooted and Spinning Silver. I was like really rooting for them. I found the main character in this kind of annoying a little bit.
That's a fair critique. What I'll say about this is Elle, the main character, she's an angsty teenager. She's pretty much miserable all the time. She's just trying to survive. And her mother is like the nicest, happiest, kindest person in the whole world. And her reaction to that is sort of to be like the complete opposite. And so at the beginning of the story, she has no friends and she's kind of like, I'm okay with that. I don't care. People don't have to like me. I just have to survive and get through this. It does get a little bit repetitive because it is just like one damn thing after another, right? It's just like, oh, this thing tried to kill me, and then this thing tried to kill me, and then this thing tried to kill me. I didn't find her annoying. I could see how someone would, though. You know, and throughout the book, she develops relationships with people, and I thought that it was kind of interesting, you know, watching her, like, grow up and be like, oh, well, maybe, like, it's not so bad to rely on other people. So I liked them. And yeah,
to be fair, my expectations were probably unreasonable because, I mean, I was such a huge fan of her prior two books. So I think it's sort of like with Scalzi, where it's like if you really love something they've done before and it's not up to that standard in your mind.
And they are very, very different from Uprooted and Spinning Silver. And I think maybe they are a little intentionally a little bit simpler because they are technically YA.
Yeah, and young people are dumb.
I didn't say that, but a little bit. Okay. So I'm gonna jump ahead and do my number one book so that Jeff can have the last word. My number one book is The 10,000 Doors of January by Alex E. Harrow. This is a portal fantasy. Do you know what a portal fantasy is? Stephanie doesn't. Jeff, do you know?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's like the Narnia kind of.
Yeah. So like Narnia, The Wizard of Oz, you know, you get transported to other...
Okay, I could have figured that out.
So this is a really fun adventure story, I thought, with January is a really compelling main character.
She was on Mad Men.
That's January Jones, so you're close, but no cigar. This is a fictional January.
Fine.
So I think why I love this book so much is it's basically an adventure story about a girl and her dog. So I think this was effectively a book that was written for me and a portal fantasy to boot. It's a really fun adventure story. At one point, something bad happens to the dog and I almost didn't forgive the author. And it turned out the dog was okay. And I was like, whew, okay. I don't have to throw this book across the room because I get very upset when bad things happen to dogs. You can kill all kinds of people in your story, don't care, but if you hurt a dog, I am not your friend anymore. So I just really loved this book. I have since read another one of her books, The Once and Future Witches, which I also liked, not quite as much, but was also a very good book.
Great. I don't know her, so I'll definitely check it out.
Okay, so I know all about portal thingamadoodles. I actually listened to an audio drama podcast. Yes, it's always about podcasts with me, called The Ostium, where this guy was like stuck in a place and he kept going through doors that were different numbered and end up in different worlds. And I liked it until it like folded in on itself and he went through like a door that went to a door and it was like the person was his, you know, like he was in the picture of the picture with the thing, and it was terrible, and this story is going nowhere. But anyway, I know about that thing. So there. All right.
Good for you. All right. Give us your number one.
It's The Space Between Worlds by Micaiah Johnson. A first-time author, so I really had no expectations. It just looked interesting. And I loved it from the first page to the last. I thought it was just a really well-crafted story. There were like three twists in it that like I did not see coming at all, but felt like I should have afterwards, which is kind of the best kind of, like, it all made sense. The story was really tight, but I didn't guess it. I didn't outguess it, even though it should have been obvious in hindsight what was happening. And this is a parallel, this is a multiverse story, but in a very kind of different way than any multiverse story I've seen. She sets up some really, really interesting rules for the multiverse story, and she really adheres to them. And I think it works. I think it really works throughout. She's also just a great writer. There's this one part of the book where she invents kind of a funeral tradition for this culture, and just like the sort of funeral language that she used, I thought it was just, it blew my mind. It was so good. I thought she was just a really good writer. I mean, I love the main character. I just loved it. And I thought it just took me by surprise because it was her first book. And I thought she was a really promising new voice. I hope she writes more. And it was just a really fun, compulsive read.
So I had not heard of this book, but when I looked it up, I immediately was like, Oh my god, this sounds so exciting. I'm definitely putting this at the top of my to-be-read list. McKay Johnson is nominated for the Astounding Award for Best New Writer.
That's astounding.
It is. The former John Campbell Award, which was renamed because John Campbell was a sexist, racist jerk, apparently.
Problematic.
Problematic, yes. So they renamed it the Astounding Award.
She looks very young. I just Googled
She's
her.
definitely
I'm
young.
sure she is young.
Do we want to know, or are we going to cry?
We probably will be very upset.
Okay, so let's not find out. Okay.
I mean, she must have written something before this because just her writing is just too good to
Right.
not have had experience.
I'm sure she's published quite a few short stories, would be my guess. So I'm still deciding whether I'm gonna go to WorldCon in Chicago this year. I'm not sure I'm like ready for such a big convention, but if I go, I'm sure she'd be there because she's nominated for an award. Have you been to WorldCon, Jeff? Do you know what WorldCon is?
I don't know. I don't know what that
Okay,
is.
so WorldCon is basically like
It's a conference for the world.
it's the World Science Fiction Society's annual conference, and it is where they give out the Hugo Awards, which are like fan voted science fiction awards. And it's a lot of fun. In 2020, it was supposed to be in New Zealand. Well, it was in New Zealand, but nobody could go for obvious reasons. And fun fact, George R. R. Martin was the guest of honor, and he had said that if he had not released The Winds of Winter, the next Game of Thrones book, by the time he set foot in New Zealand for Worldcon, that the fans could have him arrested. Except he never actually set foot in Worldcon because of the pandemic. So did he predict the pandemic? That is my question
Interesting.
for you.
Jeff, thank you so much for coming on our podcast. This was super duper fun. You seem to be able to go toe to toe with Erica, which is not always a thing that happens. So thank you very much.
Great. Well, thanks for having me. I look forward to hearing it. And good to meet you, Erica.
Yeah, it was awesome to meet you, and thank you for taking the time to come on.
My pleasure.
Thanks again to our awesome guest, Jeff, and thanks to you for listening. You can find us at anchor.fm/r-u-new-here, and you can listen to us on Spotify and whatever your favorite podcast.
Sneakercast, that's my favorite one.
Sneakercast, whatever your favorite podcatcher is. So if you have questions or comments or you want to correct us or anything else, you can hit us up on Twitter at newhere_pod. Or if you write to us, hopefully we'll give you a shout out on the show, or if you have ideas for topics. And that's pretty much it. We don't know what we will be covering next time, so that will be a surprise for all of us. But until then, have a nerdy day.
Have a nerdy day.